Hello and welcome to episode 133 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. My name is Ben, and I'm here with Derek.
Hello, Ben.
And this week, we have a special pre-recorded interview with a gentleman named Adam Holtz from Plugged In. If you don't know, Plugged In is a Christian media review outlet connected with Focus on the Family. They post reviews of primarily movies, but also TV shows and video games. And we talked with Adam about the process for reviewing content, how they categorize and identify explicit content, and the obvious ethical dilemma of a service like Plugged In or VidAngel or insert service here, where in order to keep me from watching the bad content, someone else has to. And so how does Adam, somebody who's worked there for several years, think about that? Well, we talked about it.
So let's get into that interview.
Seems like a good place to start is, Adam, for you to just tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got into your role at Plugged In.
Well, I have been at Plugged In this time about 14 years. And I say this time because I was here once before in 1996 and 97 for a brief seven-month stint. And the short version is God, and that's probably the longer version too. I have a degree in English and religion from the University of Iowa, and I worked for the Navigators for about 2.5 years right out of college in our international department here in Colorado Springs, and was sort of looking at going into collegiate ministry and had a sense that God redirected me in a different way, and was praying about trying to find a writing or editing job, and bumped into a friend at a coffee shop, and her sister was leaving a job at Plugged In, and I ended up getting that job. So that's the slightly longer version. I have always enjoyed thinking about ideas and culture and theology and kind of the intersection of those things. So it's really a pretty good fit for me. I enjoy teaching, and I think that a lot of what I try to do in the way that I write is to teach, in addition to just doing, you know, here's all the nasty stuff in this movie or music or whatever I'm reviewing that you should be aware of.
Sure. And you're there in the capacity of, I think I saw in your email, managing copy editor. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do there?
I'm really, for all intents and purposes, the editor at Plugged In.
Okay, cool. Nice.
So I edit almost everything that goes out. Some of the blog stuff I don't edit, but I edit all the reviews that we publish. So I'm more or less the main editor, and the managing copy editor thing, it's kind of a funny title in the internet age, but that's the one they gave me. So yeah, I take a look at everything that goes out.
Great. Well, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your process for reviewing content. And I realize, obviously, you don't review everything personally, but you see everything that goes through, like you said.
Yeah, I do. It's a pretty interesting process. And let me talk about movies first, because that's kind of our bread and butter, and it's about 90% of our traffic. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1 million page views a month, give or take, on the a given month. And most of that's driven by movies. So all of our reviewers go to movies. We get usually press screenings before movies are released, and we go with a flashlight and a notebook. And I'm known as the crazy note taker, so I'll take sometimes 75 to 100 pages of notes during a single movie. So it's almost like I liken it to a track event. It's a sprint.
Yeah,
I write the entire time, and I'm pretty wrung out by the time I get done reviewing a movie. And so then we bring those notes back, and we translate that into our review grid for movies, which is an overall introduction, and then positive elements, spiritual elements, sexuality, violence, drug and alcohol content, other negative stuff, which is just, you know, something that doesn't fit in one of those categories, and then kind of an overarching conclusion, you know, final things that people need to think about. So we try to take that and make editorial decisions on where can we summarize, you know, where can we do a list of content, especially with R-rated movies. We want to give people enough information to make a really good decision, but we also don't want to give them so much information that they're picturing things in their mind. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to sexual content, that's a really, really tricky balance. And we get crit from both directions, which I think is a good thing because it means we're straddling that balance. We get crit from people who say, you know, our reviews are too explicit for their kids to read, and we really don't want that to be the case. But we'll also sometimes get crit from people saying, well, you said there was, you know, this explicit scene, but you didn't say this, 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 and this. And so we're constantly battling with that tension of enough information to give people a good sense of what's in it, but not so much information that it's actually going to cause somebody to stumble just reading it. So it's kind of a fine art to take, you know, writing about sexual content in movies and making it as boring as you possibly can. So we really work hard to make it not anything that would, you know, be titillating to somebody, but yet is accurate in terms of its depiction. So we go to the movie, we come back, we write the review, and depending on the movie and depending on how long a particular reviewer has been working here, it probably takes anywhere from 3 to maybe 5 or 6 hours to write a review. And then I spend several hours editing it, and then I go back and forth with the reviewer just to make sure that we've got everything ironed out okay. And probably somewhere between a half and two-thirds of the time, at least one other person on our team is seeing the movie as well. And so that person always gets input, hey, you missed this, maybe you overemphasized this. And I think the tricky thing is that we want to be objective in that if there's 60 F-words in it, we want to get an accurate count on that, just so people know this is about, you know, the volume of this kind of content that you're going to experience if you go to this movie. But there's also a degree of subjectivity in terms of interpreting stuff, you know, interpreting themes, interpreting intent, interpreting, well, what did they mean by this message? And so even though we try to be as objective as possible, there's always interpretation involved when you're dealing with anything artistic.
Sure. And that process makes a lot of sense. It sounds like a pretty intense review process, especially after just one viewing. Are you reviewing again to get more accurate counts, like you were just mentioning there, for example?
Occasionally, we'll have an opportunity to see something twice. Okay. I really wish that we could see everything twice. It's just not, it's not doable with everything that we're doing. But we try to have two sets of eyes on most of the things that we see, so that, you know, there's another layer of you know, a safety net, if you will. And then, you know, sometimes I'll go see a movie even just with my family, not on work time, and I've always got a mental calculator going of, oh, we need to add that. Oh, you know, we miss. And so I think that's the one of the weaknesses perhaps of taking as many notes as we do, is that you're constantly looking up and down from the screen. And so it is still, it is still possible to miss stuff, but we do the very best we can.
So actually, as a kind of a side question, how many movies do you guys review every week?
We review pretty much everything that is in wide release. And so this week we had two. It was just, what was it? The Skyscraper and Hotel Transylvania 3 were the only two in wide release this week. Next week, we've got four. A really crazy week, we might have 7 or 8. And we try to get as many of the smaller indie limited release movies as we can. Sometimes that is a question of whether we have capacity to see them or not. Sometimes the culture will dictate it's a small movie, but it's an important movie and we need to see it. So we cast a pretty broad net. We really want to be able to cover everything that's in theaters. Now, the one caveat on that, and we may talk about this a little bit more later on, as our culture continues to get more and more extreme, the last year or so we've been having a conversation about, you know, are there certain things we just need to take a pass on? And the 50 Shades of Grey franchise, we did the first one. We actually did the second one and ended up pulling that review down shortly after we published it, and we did not do the third one. And so we're moving toward, especially with movies with extensive sexual content, not reviewing all of those. And the tricky thing is sometimes you don't know until you get into a theater or into a, you know, the movie, how bad it's going to be. And, you know, even a movie like recently, I saw the Baywatch movie that came out last year, if you look at the MPAA's descriptor on the content, it said graphic nudity. Well, you might think, well, that should be an automatic no-go. But especially in R-rated movies and comedies these days, graphic nudity lately has been mostly male nudity, and it's used as a joke. You know, it's used as a gag to, you know, I think be able to say graphic nudity on the descriptor. And, you know, in the case of the Baywatch movie, it was a dead guy. It was graphic, really disgusting nudity, but there wasn't anything sexual about it at all. And so it's tricky without seeing a movie to know where's the line, you know, is something over the line. And 50 Shades of Grey got a lot of press for being really explicit, but we've probably seen things that are more explicit than that that maybe didn't get as much press as it did. So we're still in the process of trying to come up with some sort of an objective assessment ahead of time for what is out of bounds. You know, what do we say we're going to take a pass on this? And we're leaning towards, and this, we haven't finalized this, but we're leaning towards skipping R-rated movies that have the combination of nudity and strong sexual content in the MPAA's content description box. And so that that may be an objective way for us to kind of sort through that, but we're still working on that right now.
At this point, do you know more about how the MPAA classifies those things, for example? So those two in particular, what would cause a movie? And obviously, I want to definitely respect what you said at the beginning. We don't want to give too much information here so as to cause people to stumble. But do you know how they're making that decision? And that's sort of factored into this new trajectory for Plugged In?
You know, I don't know a lot about it. I have read some stuff that they have fairly specific guidelines, especially with sexual content and with violent content, with regard to what pushes something from PG-13 to R and what pushes it from an R to an NC-17. And it has to do with the quantity of sexuality, of nudity on screen, whether it's male or female, and the things that are going on. You know, the more explicit they are, obviously, the more problematic it is. So I think they actually have fairly specific criteria, but even a phrase like strong sexual content, well, what does that mean? You know, even that is pretty vague. You just know it's going to be in there. So, you know, we're, like I said, we're trying to come up with an objective criteria that we can use that helps us know what we need to just take a pass on. Now, the flip side of that is, in the last few years, two of our most read reviews were the first 50 Shades of Grey review and the Deadpool review. So Deadpool's in a little bit different category than 50 Shades of Grey, but definitely an R-rated movie with extreme content in it. And both of those reviews had somewhere in the neighborhood of, I want to say, around 300,000 views. So, you know, we'll often hear from people saying, well, why don't you just skip all R-rated movies? And it seems like that could be a really straightforward solution, but not all R-rated movies are created equal. You know, you can get an R-rated movie for four F-words, or you can get it for nonstop sexual content. And so there's a huge continuum there, and that makes us reluctant to just bag on everything that's rated R. And as kind of an experiment a little while ago, I went back and looked at all of the Best Picture nominees in the last 20 years, and 50% of those were rated R. So, you know, if we didn't do that, we would have skipped Schindler's List, we would have skipped Saving Private Ryan, we would have skipped a lot of movies that had significant things to say. So at this point, we're not going to punt on all R-rated movies, just some of the most extreme ones.
Just going to slide in here to take a quick break to talk about our sponsor tonight, which is Missionaware. Of course, your Reformed theology gift shop. If you are into anything theology-wise and interested in the church fathers, and like if you tend to be a little bit nerdy about that, you should really check out Missionaware if you have not already, because they've got faces of our fathers in Reformation, as well as quotes, beautiful designs put on t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. Missionaware has been making stuff since 2010, and they've grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian. So to grab some apparel, drinkware, or accessories for yourself, or even just to browse their gorgeous designs, check them out at missionalwear.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. Thanks to Missional Wear for sponsoring Tech Reformation.
So before we get into, and I do want to come back to maybe this 50 Shades of Grey example specifically, but before we go there, I heard you list out a couple of categories for the way that you're identifying content, and not just the negative content or the explicit content or the sexual content, but also positive content. And so I'd love to hear more about what those categories are, where they come from, maybe even how they've evolved over time, if that's something that has happened. It sounds like they're even in evolution now. So,
yeah, you know, there's been a little bit of evolution. Those categories have been fairly fixed for about not quite 20 years now. When we went to the web reviews in 1999, Plugged In had been just a magazine before that. And so we really launched our web presence in 1999. And we felt like we wanted a detailed way to try to get at the content that was in films. And I don't know. Well, I do know who came up with those. One of our editors, who's no longer with us at our team, he's still alive. He's not dead.
I was going to make a joke about that, but I really didn't want to actually happen upon
be wrong on that.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to biff that one, right? So, he came up with it, and I think that it covers the major categories. You know, we do look at positive themes, even in movies that have, you wouldn't think, have any positive content. We really try to give films credit for, this is what they got right, even if everything else is totally wrong. And even the 50 Shades of Grey movie had some interesting things to say about intimacy and romance and commitment. And we caught flack for saying anything positive about it at all. And then we move into spiritual content, and that's everything from worldview, belief systems, to a scene takes place in a church, or, you know, we see a cross in the background of somebody's bedroom, or that sort of things. Because none of those decisions that a filmmaker makes are arbitrary. They're all deliberate decisions. And so the spiritual content section can have a really wide range of possibilities. And that's where we try to deal with worldview issues with anything in a film that has a spiritual component, whether it's other world religions or just attitudes towards Christianity. That's where we deal with that. And then the sexual content section, we've already talked about quite a bit. Violence is in some ways similar to sexuality in that we want to give enough description for people to know what's going on, but we don't want to traumatize anybody. So in some cases, the more explicit or extreme a movie is in terms of violence or sexuality, we're more likely to condense and just give a summary of content. You know, we see lots of people shot, there's blood spatter, you know, there's, you know, limbs come off, that sort of thing, as opposed to, you know, a play-by-play in a particular scene that invites you to visualize it. So we really try to stay away from that. And then we have, drug and alcohol content, profanity, other negative content, which is just kind of a catch-all for attitudes or things that don't fit in the other sections. And then a summary that we don't typically say go or don't go. We just try to sort of reiterate what the most positive and negative things are about a film, so that that's all that somebody read in our review. They would still get a pretty good sense of, yeah, you know, I think I could handle that, or no, that's way out of bounds. And, you know, we often get crit from people who think, why do you count profanities? Isn't that just kind of crazy? Can't you just say there's a lot of profanity? And I agree sometimes that counting F-words for a living is a strange, strange job. But there's a difference to a viewer between 1 or 2 and 50, and there's a difference between 50 and 300, you know? I don't know where that line is, but people's tolerance levels really vary. You know, you might be able to tolerate 1 or 2 really harsh profanities, but if there's going to be 100 of them, that's something that you want to know. So it's interesting just to hear from people about, you know, what they think is, you know, that we don't need to go into that level of detail. And the point is not to be moralists or to be Pharisees, but to just give people the information they need to make a good decision about whether they want to be exposed to that or not.
Right. So
I actually just realized this about myself. I use this site regularly. And I don't even have any kids in my own personal walk with Christ, just thinking about what things I should be including in my intake and what things I shouldn't. And one thing I've just realized is at the end of summarizing all of this content, obviously you put a plug score on it out of 5. And I've always interpreted that as a rating of the morality of the content, as in if it has more plugs, it's more moral, and if it has less, it's less moral. And yet most movie reviewers, when they give out stars or thumbs up or whatever, they're telling you whether they think the quality is good, whether it's well produced, the cinematography is good, that kind of thing. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Well, you are, and this is actually a long rabbit trail that we could talk about for 20 minutes. We have also had an ongoing discussion about whether the plugs are helpful or not. And about a month ago, if you've been on the site recently, we removed them from the site. So the written reviews on the website no longer have the plugs, because we were hearing from lots of people who would say things like, "Oh, I love your website. I can just look at the plugs and I don't have to read the review." And so what we hoped would be sort of a jumping off point for people to go deeper in our heavily consumer culture that moves very fast, for a lot of people, that was the only thing they looked at. And the other problem that we had was the plugs were kind of a blunt instrument for dealing with really complex worldview issues. So take the remake of Beauty and the Beast last year, for example. Here was a really terrific movie that the director came out right before it came out and said, "Hey, we've got a gay character in this." And so what do you do with a movie that's otherwise pretty wonderful, that has a couple, you know, noticeable allusions if you're an adult looking for it, but not really noticeable for kids? How much do you dock it for that? Well, we gave it a 2.5 out of 5, and that just made everybody angry. We had a lot of people saying, you know, homosexual content of any kind in a kid's movie is automatic 0 or negative 10. I mean, those people, the rating couldn't be low enough. And then we had a lot of people that was like, you know, this is the world we're living in today. This is content that we can deal with our kids. We don't think you should have hammered it as hard as you did. And so in some ways, the plug system became, the rating system became almost a no-win situation. And our desire is to equip people to make good decisions for their family and to grow in their own discernment. And so we sort of felt like the plugs were getting in the way of that happening effectively. So we pulled them off about a month ago, and I would say a fair bit of the feedback we've gotten has been disappointment and some criticism, but people I think have understood why we made that decision too.
Yeah, it's interesting from a worldview perspective, which I realize is a big part of what you do with Plugged In, is not just what's the movie telling me, but also what's it telling me to think and how does it view the world and present the world. And one of the things I've noticed, especially with TV shows and movies lately, is there's this normalizing effect that, you know, it may not be very explicit in the case of Beauty and the Beast, and maybe you won't see it if you're not looking for it. And yet there's this normalizing, like, this is just the way things are. And you can tell exactly. The worldview behind it is, you know, love is love. How could, you know, my private life harm you? Which obviously we would have significant disagreements with, I think out of love for neighbor.
Right. No, that's right.
But it's interesting to think about how you would include something like that in the plugs, like you just said. You really, I don't know if you can.
Yeah, well, it was not an instrument that really effectively deals with complex worldview concerns, and that was one of the main reasons why we felt like, yeah, this thing has become perhaps more of a liability than an asset to our readers. And and we understand that it's a countercultural thing to get rid of a rating. I mean, we know everything has ratings. You have Yelp and Google and Amazon, and you want to be able to leave a rating for everything. But in this case, we really want to challenge people lovingly, hopefully not annoyingly, to go deeper and to do that work. And we understand it's a countercultural thing to ask them to do more work.
Makes sense. So on a positive note, what benefit have you seen to Christians from Plugged In as you've interacted with people who use the site and read the reviews? And I noticed earlier you made a distinction between raising your children well and then also growing in your own personal discernment. And I've seen the site used in that way as well. So like I mentioned myself, for example, I don't have any children yet, and still I use the site quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that our desire is that people will interact with the site in such a way that it helps them, that it challenges them. It's like, oh, I've never thought about that. I hope that we're winsome enough that no matter where you're at, whether you're a conservative Christian or whether you don't have any faith at all, you could still read our reviews and think, wow, I never thought about that. That's something I really want to think about. So we want to be provocative in the best sense of that word. You know, we want to provoke people to go deeper and to think. And it's our job to try to see. You know, we're sort of the watchman on the wall, like we see with Ezekiel. You know, we're the ones looking out at the culture and trying to, with God's help and with His grace, say, here's what's coming. Here's what's happening. You need to know about this. And maybe you don't need to know for yourself, but you need to know for your kids. You know, like 13 Reasons Why is a great example of something recently that's been a cultural phenomenon. It deals with pretty much all of the hot button issues that kids are dealing with these days. It's a really explicit show. It's really problematic, but it's gotten enormous traction culturally. So, you know, that would be an example of something where we'd want to be a resource that if you're a parent and you want to know what the show's all about, you could read our review of each episode and really come away with a sense of, you know, here's how I want to deal with it with my child.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think that segues me perfectly to my last question. And I mentioned wanting to get back to this later. The obvious ethical dilemma, right, is that the challenge is with Plugged In, somebody has to review it. So in order to help me, you have to go watch the movie. And maybe we can use 50 Shades of Grey as the test case, since we all probably agree there that, man, I don't want to make anybody go watch that movie who's a Christian who's trying to walk with the Lord. And so I'm just wondering, having worked there for 14 years, I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard this. How have you thought about that dilemma in your time working with Plugged In?
Well, there's several layers of an answer to that question. I think, first of all, each of us, and maybe we didn't have this totally solidified when we each started, but we have a sense of calling, that this is something that God has asked us to do. And I think that when God calls you to do something, He equips you with what you need to get it done. It's a unique calling. It's not one that most people probably would want to venture into, but all of us have a sense that this is where God wants us to be. So that's the first part of the answer. The second part, I mentioned the note-taking. When you watch a movie with a flashlight and a pen and you're writing everything down, in a weird way, it creates a kind of safety because it almost turns it into a clinical kind of experience, for better or worse. Like there are things about that are good, and there are things about it that may be not so good. But I'm almost watching it like a scientist or an anthropologist might. You know, I want to see what's happening here and accurately record it. And when I'm in the process of trying to accurately get something down, it's an interesting thing in terms of the way I think it keeps me from engaging perhaps in, you know, especially with sexual content. And I'm not going to say that it doesn't affect me whatsoever. We are being exposed to those images. So I don't want to sound like, oh, this is not an issue. But that clinical aspect of the kind of observation we're doing really does provide a layer of protection. And I can look anybody in the eye. I would look you in the eye if our video was working and say, there's not much that has stayed with me over 14 years that I feel like, oh man, that has totally undermined my walk with God. Now, I can go back and remember movies that were really explicit, but I feel like there's a layer of protection and God calling us to do it in the way we do it. And the other thing is that if there's content in a movie that one of us doesn't want to see, all of us on our team have the freedom to say, I can't see that. And so, weirdly enough, I'm 47, and I have found that when I go to horror movies, my chest ends up hurting for about the next 3 hours. And so I have a physiological reaction to horror movies that I didn't have when I was 25 or 30. And so for the most part, I don't assign myself those movies. So it's a different thing than you know, like 50 Shades of Grey. But all of us have sensitivities. One person on our team is more sensitive to violence, and so we don't put her on the most extremely gratuitous violent stuff. And I think the other thing is we pray before and after films too. If we know something's going to be really bad, we pray. And a lot of times, even with some of the worst stuff, we'll still have two people there. So there's a sense of accountability that you're not in there by yourself, but that as a team, we're doing everything we can to take it seriously and to take that risk seriously. So I don't know that it's a great analogy, but I think in some ways that there are parallels to other risky professions. You know, people who are firefighters don protective gear to go and do a dangerous job, but they feel a sense of calling to that too. So it's not perfect. I'm not going to say I'm wholly and completely unaffected. The weirdness of this job is you sort of have to be able to watch anything but still are sensitive enough to catch everything. So there's sort of a level of desensitization involved just in doing the basic job. And yet we have to really stay very focused on what we're doing. And, you know, I think we do the best we can. It's not perfect. And I think that idea of I think it's in Ezekiel, you know, that God called the watchmen to the walls to sort of pay attention to what was happening in the culture so that they could warn the people of God. I think there is a biblical analog there with what we do that is in play here as well.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And you've given me a lot to think about for sure, and hopefully our listeners as well. I'm trying to think of something that's analogous to maybe how I would understand the dilemma. I don't know that it's perfectly one for one, to be honest with you, but the one that I keep coming back to is like a Jewish man working on the Sabbath or causing someone else to work on the Sabbath. So, for example, if they were to break Sabbath, they would be in sin. And if they were to cause someone else to, say, pick up sticks on the Sabbath, they would cause someone else to be in sin. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get through and think through as I engage with the platform.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a perfect process. I don't want to be blithe with regard to the concern that you're raising, because I think it's totally legitimate. I think within the context of what we do and how we do it and doing it together, there's as much protection there as there possibly can be doing something that has a kind of spiritual danger sort of built into it.
Yeah, I guess you have, I guess some of the tactics I could use are removed from you because of your role, in the sense that I can avert my eyes, but you have to, because you've got to chronicle it, like you said. But it also sounds like, as you explain some more of the process, that you have added advantages that I don't have. I don't typically go in with, you know, I might watch a movie with my wife, but we're not on the same team trying to accomplish this review process together. And we're not, in one sense, preparing ourselves and praying and bracing ourselves in the way that you are expecting maybe to have to.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think all of our spouses play a role too. All of the men on the team are married, which, you know, I think I'm not sure it would be the best job for a single guy. Just because of the sexual stuff that we're exposed to, you know, but is it better for a married guy? I don't know. That argument maybe totally just fell apart right there as I was talking. So,
well, but you have the added accountability in that scenario. Like you have a life partner to, you know, talk about anything that's, you know,
totally
going on.
And, you know, there've been a few things that I've had to talk through with my wife over the years. And that's all right. And she, my wife is, actually, part of her schooling, she had a degree in film and theology, or an emphasis in her degree. And so she's very interested in film and story, and we're wide open to talking about that. And I think that is another layer of protection.
Mm-hmm. Just one last follow-up on this line of conversation. And I don't want to be insensitive here, so, you know, please use wisdom in how you choose to respond, and, you know, feel free to not share whatever. But I'm curious about folks on your team you've worked with over the years. If there are times you would think of where maybe the process has caused people to stumble, or maybe even people have not been able to wrestle well with the dilemma and have had to go elsewhere. And obviously you don't have to name names, but I'm curious how that has changed and helped the process over time, if it has.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much I can say about that.
Sure.
I would say...
Totally understand that.
We had one person leave the team a number of years ago who I think you could say maybe some of these things did get to him a little bit. But I also think he would be the first to say there were other things going on besides just the job. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, again, I don't want to be Pollyanna about the risk here. There is a risk that's real, and it's actually good to talk about it. So thank you for asking.
Sure. So as we wrap up here, I'd love to hear from you, Adam, on what the future is for Plugged In. And you've even talked a little bit about some changes and conversations you're having right now. But where are we headed? What can we expect from Plugged In?
Well, we will continue to provide movie coverage. We also review television, music, video games, and books. So movies are just really a portion of what we do. We also understand that the media world that kids are growing up in today is radically different than it was even 10 years ago. And we're doing our best to sort of try to keep up with that. I think at this point I can let the cat out of the bag. We're just on the verge of starting to review YouTube channels.
How interesting. So yeah, that is interesting.
I have an 11-year-old. If I left him to his own devices, he would split his time evenly between Fortnite and YouTube. I mean, he would watch YouTube videos all day long if I let him. And the research shows that especially for boys up to about the age of 12, YouTube is now the top of the list of their media, the things that they consume media-wise. So we're going to start reviewing YouTube channels, you know, the ninjas of the world. He's a big Fortnite player. And we'll have all different categories of things that we're going to take a look at there. We're looking at trying to do more reviews of apps and you know, just where the technology is going, and especially helping parents just know what's out there that their kids are into with the mobile stuff. I sound really old saying that, what the kids are into. I'm 47. I'm not that old. So those are some of the new things that are on the horizon that I think we're pretty excited about. There's some other things that are probably still in gestation enough that I don't know that I should probably share them at this point. But, you know, we'll at some point we will do another redesign on our site. It's the internet. You can't go 3 years with the same site.
Yeah.
Which makes me crazy, frankly. But I'm sure the point at which we do another redesign sometime in the next year or two or three or four, we'll probably integrate some new features in at that point, too.
Cool. Looking forward to seeing what you come out with. So thanks so much for your time today,
Adam. Yeah, thank you.
And we really appreciate having you on Tech Reformation.
Well, thanks. I'd love to be on again some point in the future for anything we didn't cover here.
Sure. Sounds great. Well, that was great. Thanks to Adam Holtz for coming on. And thank you, Ben, for heading up that interview. It was really interesting. Well, thanks, Derek. I appreciate that. To be honest with you, I'm still thinking a lot about what he said in response to my fifth and final question as far as his arguments about the ethical dilemma. I really appreciated the seriousness with which he took it and just the fact that it's something he's thought through. I still find myself in a bit of a quandary, but I want to take some time to think about it, and I'm really curious to hear what our listeners think. So if you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack workspace. Sign up for free at slack.techreformation.com. We'll be having all kinds of good conversation in the episode discussion channel. There's a couple of guys I'm thinking of right now whose opinions I really want to hear on this.
And you can always talk to us via Twitter at techreformation on Twitter. And check out older episodes of the show on techreformation.com.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, 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 I ain't looking back. I made my choice, and I ain't looking back.